What is the meaning of the night to be much observed? And why should we keep it? Now, we've already been covering on some other tapes why the night to be much observed is not the Passover night. So we're going to concentrate on the meaning of the night to be much observed, which then begins the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Let's come to Exodus, the 12th chapter, and let's see where this is mentioned. Let's see where it's commanded. And then we are going to see a very astounding statement which tells us something very important concerning that night and why we should observe it. Now let's come to Exodus 12 and verse 37. All the details concerning the Passover and leading up to this we've already covered on other tapes, so I want to cover specifically the meaning of the night to be much observed. Now let's pick it up here in verse 40. Now the sojourning of the children of Israel who dwelt in Egypt was 430 years. Now that is a key statement to look at, because this gives a reference to something else, as we will see. And it came to pass at the end of 430 years, even the selfsame day, or you could say on that very same day, it came to pass that all the host of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. Now this reference cannot refer to the Passover, because the Passover, the first time they took it was when? The night before. So it can't be referring to the Passover. The selfsame day does not refer to the Passover, but it refers to something else that had occurred 430 years earlier. It is a night to be much observed unto the Lord for bringing them out of the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord to be observed by all the children of Israel in their generations. So here is the command, special command. Now, we can understand that this is not the Passover from this point of view. That on the Passover, they were to keep the Passover, and when they ate it, it was to be eaten in trepidation. That's what the Hebrew means. Now, this one here, notice, the night to be much observed, one, there are no sacrifices they are to give. At this point here, on the first one, later, they would be giving sacrifices at the temple. But here, they're leaving Egypt. So this is the first start. And so, let's come over here to verse 51. Verse 51, came to pass the selfsame day that the Lord did bring the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt by their armies. That's talking about the day they left. Now that's where the chapter break should be. Verse 51 should actually be verse 1, chapter 13. Because verse 50 comes to a full stop, boom. And this is a whole new subject. Now, we're going to see something about this a little bit later on, but we'll take a clue here. Verse 1 of chapter 13. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, the selfsame day that they were coming out of Egypt, saying, sanctify to me all the firstborn. Now, we'll cover that as we come to the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Whatsoever opens the womb among the children of Israel, both of man and of beast, it is mine. And the Lord said to the people, remember this day in which you came out from Egypt, out of the house of bondage, for by the strength of hand the Lord has brought you out from this place. There shall be no leavened bread eaten. So we're going to see that this day has to do with the firstborn, has to do with the sanctifying of the firstborn, And as we will see, not in this sermon about the night to be much observed. Maybe, I don't know, we'll see when we get to it. But we will find out when we get to Deuteronomy 16, either in this tape or another tape, that the sacrifices that they gave in Deuteronomy 16 had to do with a night to be much observed. Now let's look at something else concerning leaving Egypt. I'll come to Numbers 33. Now let's clarify this because there's a lot of confusion concerning it, and really the main portion of the confusion concerning this stemmed from two sources. Number one, the lack of a clear translation concerning sunset and between the two evenings in the King James Version of the Bible, and also other translations. That's one. Number two, the tradition of the Jews of keeping a 15th Passover instead of a 14th. Now, why do they keep a 15th Passover? Well, as we saw in Numbers 9, it clearly says that in order to take the Passover, they have to be in the land, within the geographical area of the land of Israel, so that they were on a journey. They could not take a 14th Passover. So what happened was this. When the Jews were in exile, which they still are today, they cannot, and they will tell you they cannot, keep a 14th Passover. So they keep the Feast of Unleavened Bread, but call it, the whole thing, Passover. So when they have their meal on the beginning the night of the 15th, They are actually eating an abbreviated form of the feast of the night to be much observed. And we'll see that a little bit later. Now here, Numbers 33. Now let's look at this because this also causes confusion. And the third reason that causes confusion is this. Preconceived notions. You come to the scriptures with something in mind, and you're looking to prove what you have in mind. So when you read it, you think you're proving what you have in mind because you have read it, and you think that that's what it's saying. Now here in Numbers 33 is part of it. Verse 1, these are the journeyings of the children of Israel, which went forth out of the land of Egypt with their armies under the hand of Moses and Aaron. And Moses wrote their going out according to their journeys by the commandment of the Lord. These are their journeys according to their goings out. They departed from Ramses. Now, as we saw, the Passover was kept on the night of the 14th. On the day portion of the 14th, they finished spoiling the Egyptians and assembled at Ramses. And they had to come from the land of Goshen to Ramses so they could begin their march and their journey out. So they departed from Ramses in the first month on the 15th day of the first month. And we know that Leviticus 23 says, on the 14th day is the Lord's Passover, and on the 15th is the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So this, the 15th, that's when they left. On the morrow, after the Passover, the children of Israel went out with a high hand in the sight of all the Egyptians, while the Egyptians were burying or still burying their firstborn, which the Lord had smitten among them, and upon their gods, the Lord also executed judgments. Now, what is the preconceived notion that people read into this? They read into it, this must be the morning of the 15th. No, it doesn't say that. It doesn't say that. They left on the 15th. That's when they departed. That doesn't mean the whole body of them were out, but they were departing at that point. When you have 1,800,000 people that are going to be be marching out even in a wide column, you're going to get it started. The ones who are at the end are going to come along later. And as I mentioned in the Passover book, if you observe the Rose Parade in Pasadena, California, when the parade starts, 2 hours later, the last crew is starting while the first crew or marching band or whatever it is or float is finishing. So when it says departed, that doesn't mean the whole mass of them had completely gone. Now, let's come to Deuteronomy 16. We'll just look at one verse here, which is important. One verse. We will come back to Deuteronomy 16 because this will be important. Okay, verse 1. Deuteronomy 16. Observe the month of Abib and keep the Passover unto the Lord. That's one day, isn't it? Yes. For in the month of Abib, the Lord your God brought you forth out of Egypt by night. That's why it's a night to be much observed, because they came out the next night. And as I mentioned previously, show me anywhere in the Bible where God ever combined 2 days together. Show me one instance where God said, "Oops, let's combine the 2 days." No, men are the ones who have combined them. So they went out by night, so you put it all together. They left with a high hand. When did they start? When does the 14th end? Sunset on the 14th. Is it still light when the sun is going down? Yes. Were they leaving when the sun was going down? Yes. Did they go on into the night with their exodus? Yes. But what were the Egyptians doing when they started? Numbers 33, they were still burying their firstborn. Now, when you consider the number that were dead, if they had a population of 24 million, or you can pick any number you want, 20% are firstborn, whether it's male or female. So if you have, let's just say, they only had 10 million. They had 2 million dead human beings. So we'll give it the low figure. We'll lowball it. And how about all the animals? Now, how long do you think it's going to take them to bury? How long do you think it's going to take them to bury 2 million people plus all the animals? Because, you know, Egypt is a hot place. And if you don't bury them right away, what happens? These gigantic flies, about as big around as a half-dollar piece, come in. And the buzzards and the vultures. And if you don't get them buried, they get in the hot sun and the bodies explode. The question was asked, do you think they might have burned some of them? Who knows? It doesn't say they burned them. It says they buried them. So, you know. But anyway, that's a big task. Which means that you only had, not counting or counting all women and children, you only had 8 million to bury 2 million, right? So if you say the adult males that were left who had to do the work and maybe some adult females, then you're probably down to a couple million. Yeah, a comment was made, verse 4 in the King James says, for the Egyptians buried all their firstborn, and that took more than just on the day portion of the Passover to accomplish that. See, they went out with a high hand in the sight of all the Egyptians who were what? Burying their dead. Now, obviously, when it got dark, they would quit. But obviously, if you watch anything like Dolores watched a historical presentation of Treblinka, where they started killing Jews as early as 1941, I believe. And they killed 900,000 in one place. So Treblinka was in Poland, and the Nazis were killing the Polish Jews. And they would gas them and put them in this big pit. And then they'd even put some lime to try and get rid of the bodies, but they couldn't do it. And they had so many dead in this big pit, and the stench was getting so bad that they had to dig them up and burn them. So when it says here, for the Egyptians buried all their firstborn, that doesn't mean they did it on that one day. Now, they went out at night, the night to be much observed, and they went out with a high hand. Now, this is far different than the Passover night, which was what? A night of fear, a night of terror, a night of trepidation. So now, you have two operations going here. The Passover, you are redeemed, and the night to be much observed, you are delivered. So now you're coming out. Now let's come back here to Exodus 12 and let's read this again. And let's focus in on the time period. Because the phrase, 430 years on the self same day. And we'll ask the question, what does that refer to? And what was the self-same day? Now, we know that according to the Hebrew calendar, the self-same day was the 15th. We just read it, Numbers 33, right? Yes. Now, what we're going to do, we're going to find out that this actually goes back to Abraham and God's covenant with Abraham in Genesis 15. So let's go to Genesis 15. And what we're going to see in Genesis 15 is quite a tremendous thing. And then we will also go to Genesis 22. Genesis 15. And what we are going to see is this. We are going to see a two-day sequence, which involves two nights. And the second night of which we will see is referred to in Exodus 12 as the self-same day 430 years later. So, in fact, we are going to see that the source and the origin of the Passover and the night to be much observed began, actually, in Genesis 15. Now, let's pick it up here let's come to verse 1. And after these things, the word of the Lord came unto Abram in a vision, saying, Fear not, Abram, I am your shield and your exceeding great reward. And Abram said, Lord God, what will you give me, seeing I go childless? And the steward of my house is Eliezer of Damascus. And Abram said, Behold to me, you have given no seed, and lo, one born in my house is my heir. So he could adopt him and designate him as his heir. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, This shall not be your heir, but he that comes forth out of your own bowels shall be your heir. So this is the promise of Isaac. And also then, the promise which comes down to Jacob and to the 12 tribes of Israel. Now notice, verse 5 is a key verse. And he said, He brought him forth abroad and said, Look now toward the heaven and tell the stars if you're able to number them. Now, when do you see the stars? At night. So we're dealing with a night. You can't see him at noon. You can't see him at sunrise. Maybe you can see a few faint stars. You can't see him at sunset, except maybe a few faint stars and maybe what we call Venus and Mars today. So there must have been a lot of stars out there because he said, and tell, or that is, count the stars if you are able to number them. And he said unto him, so shall your seed be. So we have two promises here, don't we, of seed. One, of Isaac, the physical seed. Two, the stars of heaven, which then are the spiritual seed. Because what did Jesus say? Just hold your place and come to Matthew 13:43. And let's look at this in Daniel, the 12th chapter, and we will see what the stars of heaven represent in the promise of the spiritual seed. Matthew 13 and verse 43. Now, this is at the return of Christ. This is talking about the resurrection. Now, a little later, we're going to see that we are Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise. So the promise was given in Genesis 15. Number one, of the physical seed, Isaac. Number two, of the spiritual seed, that would be those in the first resurrection. And notice what Jesus says of those in the first resurrection at his return. Verse 43. Then shall the righteous shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Then he has this little cryptic statement here. Who has ears to hear, let him hear. Now, the only way you can understand it is if God gives you the understanding through his word. Now, let's come back to Daniel 12 and let's look at what it says here concerning the righteous. And because, you see, when you understand that the sun is what? What is the sun? It's a star, right? Yes. Now, let's pick it up here in verse 1 of Daniel 12. And at that time, that's the time of the end, the time of the resurrection, shall Michael stand up, the great prince which stands for the children of your people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time, and at that time your people shall be delivered, everyone that's found written in the book. Now that's the book of life, and this has to be the first resurrection. And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth, shows they were buried, shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. Now that's for those who commit the unpardonable sin and face the second death at the end of the millennium and 100-year period. Now notice verse 3, and they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament. And they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. So the promise given to Abraham back here has some big time promises, doesn't it? So that's why he said to him as he took him out at night. And remember, no smog, no pollution, no city lights. You can see all the stars. And I'm sure that was greater than because Texas in America claims that you can see the stars clearer in Texas than any place. But I just imagine this was a whole lot better. Now notice verse 6. Because you see, what God asked him to do was an impossible task. So he believed in the Lord. So you have to believe what God says. Now, if you're dealing with God, who is a God of truth, which he is, and his word is true, which it is, and God cannot lie, which he cannot. Let's come back here to Genesis 15, and let's pick it up here in verse 6. So he believed in the Lord for what? The two promises, physical seed and a resurrected spiritual seed. Very important. He believed in the Lord, and it was accounted to him for righteousness, or imputed to him for righteousness. But as we know, that has nothing to do with whether he kept the commandments of God or not. This was a greater righteousness. This righteousness is put in right standing with God because you believe him. And then he said to him, I am the Lord that brought you out of Ur of the Chaldees to give you this land to inherit it. And he said to him, Lord God, whereby shall I know that I shall inherit it? Now, as we're going to see, we are on the day portion of that day. Yes, he was talking about the promised land. He was in the land of Canaan. But he dwelt in it, never having received an inheritance in it yet. And when he says to inherit it, that includes all of his progeny, as we will see. So he said, Lord God, whereby shall I know that I shall inherit it? And he said to him, take me a heifer 3 years old, and a she-goat 3 years old, and a ram 3 years old, and a turtle dove and a young pigeon. Now all of these were also later used for sacrifices at the temple. But it's interesting. 3 years old, so you're talking about good-sized animals, right? And we're going to see that this is a special sacrifice. There's no altar that is there to burn them on. There is no splashing the blood up upon any altar at all. And here's what he did, verse 10. And he took unto him all these and divided them in the middle, cut them in half from head to toe. Now, when you do that, if you watched any of the wildlife documentaries on how lions get buffalo and tear them apart and eat them. So just think of this as about the size of a buffalo, African buffalo. Slit the throat, and then you cut it down the middle. Now, how are you going to cut it down the middle? Well, you have to virtually take a battle axe. And this is a very bloody affair. And you've got all the guts. You've got everything there. And he laid one piece against the other. In other words, they put them back to back. And what he did in putting them back to back, he also created a path that went down between those sacrificial animals. Now, this is a special sacrifice. Now, you can read of this in the Christian Passover book. You can also read of it in the Harmony of the Gospels. And in the Harmony of the Gospels, I've got a chart which shows the sequence of events and how this also fits in with the death of Jesus, as we will see a little bit later. But the birds he divided not. Now, verse 11, and when fowls came down upon the carcasses, Abram drove them away. Now, notice verse 12. Verse 12 is a key verse because this gives us a time flow of the day. And what we're going to see, this is actually the time flow of the Passover day and reflects directly to the crucifixion of Christ and the timing of his death more than the Passover of the children of Israel in the land of Egypt. And when the sun was going down, it's still up. There's still some time. It was going down. So what happened to Abraham? A deep sleep fell upon Abram, and lo, a horror of great darkness fell upon him. Now, what was he experiencing in this, how should we say, great vision that God brought upon him? He was experiencing death without dying. What it would be like to die. The horror of great darkness fell upon him. And he said to Abram, know of a surety that your seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. And also that nation whom they shall serve, I will judge, and afterward they shall come out with great substance. That's a prophecy of delivering the children of Israel out from a captivity and taking them out of the land of Egypt. Now, as it turned out, it was little more than 400 years. It was 430 years. But in the fourth generation, so that gives us latitude here to understand it, the fourth generation, they shall come out from there again, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. Now notice verse 17 is another key. And it came to pass that when the sun went down and it was dark, now we're in to the next day. Now let's see what happened. And behold, a smoking furnace and a burning lamp. Now what was the smoking furnace doing? The burning lamp passed between those parts. What was Abraham actually seeing in this vision? Here's a burning lamp that's walking down between those parts. And probably the smoking furnace came right behind it and devoured everything. Completely devoured it. So what this is, God is showing and prophesying his own death. Prophesying his death and burial, which happened when? On the Passover day. And the beginning of the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, he was what? In the tomb. So this is a special covenant oath. It's also known as a maledictory oath. Meaning that in order to fulfill this, you pronounce upon yourself your own death. And notice the promise. Verse 18. And the same day the Lord made a covenant with Abraham, saying, unto your seed have I given this land, from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates. And then he lists all the land of the Canaanites that they would receive. So, what God is doing with this, he's guaranteeing that on this second night, and we will see this became the night of the 15th. So that means the first night was the night of the 14th. So we have the Passover and the night to be much observed right here at the, what you might say, the proto, the first fulfillment of it. He made a covenant. He's going to give the land to them. And he was also going to deliver them. Now, when we come back to Exodus 12, what we're going to see, that this self-same day had to refer back to, one, the delivering of the children of Israel through the Passover day, and two, the self-same day, because the Passover day comes first, then the next day is called the self-same day, refers to this day that God made the covenant with Abraham that he would do it. Now let's come back to Exodus 12 here for just a minute. Let's come back to verse 40 again, and this will help us interpret this verse. Now the sojourning of the children of Israel who dwelt in Egypt, which was prophesied, right? Yes. Was 430 years. And it came to pass at the end of 430 years, even the self-same day, it came to pass that all the host of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. It is a night to be much observed unto the Lord for bringing them out of the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord to be observed of all the children of Israel in their generations. Why? because he fulfilled his promise to deliver them. And he fulfilled his promise concerning the Passover day on the 14th, and his promise to deliver them that they would go out with great substance on the night to be much observed and leave on the 15th. In both cases, what do we have? Two different days, two different meanings, though connected. So this helps us understand the significance of the night to be much observed. Now then, let's come to Deuteronomy 16. As I've already previously explained with Deuteronomy 16, so we'll just review it here, but let's understand what is happening and how that relates to the firstborn. Because the firstborn especially went out with a high hand. All the children of Israel did, but especially the firstborn, because they were spared from death. So this was a significant thing. And all the firstborn belonged to God. All the males. All the females, Deuteronomy 14, as we have seen, were brought to the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and also to the Feast of Tabernacles. And they were used as part of the offerings that they would give in peace offerings to God. Now, let's pick it up here in Deuteronomy 16 and verse 2. And we'll get a clue. And I remember the first time I understood this, because Deuteronomy 16 is difficult to understand because it seems to contradict some of the things in Exodus 12, and it seems to combine some of the things in Exodus 12 and make it look like it comes on the same day. But it doesn't. Now, first of all, verse 1. Keep the Passover. When were they to keep the Passover? Night of the 14th, right? That's one day, is it not? Yes. Unto the Lord your God. For in the month of Abib, the Lord your God brought you forth out of Egypt by night, which was what? The beginning of the night of the 15th. So then we have getting into the second day, don't we? You shall therefore sacrifice the Passover unto the Lord your God of the flock and the herd, in the place which the Lord shall choose to place his name there. Now, I've got a full explanation of that in the Passover book. You can go back and read that. Very important to understand. But here is the key that unlocks this so we have understanding. This is not the sacrifice of the Passover lamb for the Passover, but this is in preparation for the night to be much observed. Now, how do we know that? Notice the phrase, of the flock and of the herd. As I mentioned before, have you ever heard of a Passover calf? No. What does it say there in Exodus 12? You're to take of the flock, of the sheep, and of the goats. But here it says herd, and the Hebrew here is bovine. So this has to do with the peace offerings, now here called Passover offerings. Not that they were for the Passover day, but for the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Now, they probably started preparing these so they could be offered right at sunset, beginning the night to be observed. These had to be offered at the altar, not the Passover lamb, in the place which the Lord your God should choose to place his name there. You shall eat no leavened bread with it, 7 days shall you eat unleavened bread therewith, even the bread of affliction, for you came forth out of the land of Egypt in haste, that you may remember the day when you came forth out of the land of Egypt all the days of your life. And there shall be no leavened bread seen with you in all your coasts for 7 days, neither shall there anything of the flesh which you sacrifice in the first day at even remain all night until morning. Now then, that sounds an awful lot like the Passover, doesn't it? But let's understand something. Peace offerings could not be left until morning. Okay, let's go on. You may not sacrifice the Passover within any of your gates. See, and that sounds like it contradicts the commands for the Passover, which they were to do at their homes, right? See, so this has to be the sacrifices for the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Now let's continue on and I'll show you. But at the place, verse 6, that the Lord your God shall choose to place his name in, and there you shall sacrifice the Passover at even, at the going down of the sun, at the season you came out of Egypt. Now here is a gross mistranslation, which is this, verse 7. You shall roast and eat. That doesn't have to do with roasting at all. The Hebrew here is bashal, which is, you shall boil. So we have two things that tell us the clue that these were really peace offerings, which were prepared on the day portion of the Passover, to be eaten after the Passover on the night to be much observed. Those two key things are verse 7, you shall boil. Well, we're going to see the Passover lamb was never to be boiled. And I go in great detail in that in the Christian Passover book. Number 2, the bovine. There's no such thing as a Passover calf. Can you imagine for a family of 10 trying to eat a calf? And can you imagine trying to burn the bones and the hide and everything of the calf? No. Okay. Let's look at the commands in Exodus 12, and then we will look at the command for a peace offering. Exodus 12. Let's see what the command was. After they kill it, put the blood on the side post and the lentils, verse 8, and you shall eat the flesh in that night, roast with fire. Now here it means roasted with fire. Now it didn't say with fire in Deuteronomy 16, did it? Because that should not be roast, that should be boiled. Roast with fire, and unleavened bread, and with bitter herbs shall you eat it. You shall not eat of it raw, nor boiled, sodden, bashal, at all with water, but roast with fire. Now they even had this. The Jews' tradition was that if they had it on a spit and they were roasting it in the fire, and some of the juice from the roasting got on the staff that was through the middle of the animal where they were turning it kind of like a rotisserie and roasting it, and the juice cooked part of the meat, they had to cut that meat off and not use it because that was considered boiled in the juice. So he says, not sodden with water at all, but roast with fire. And so when you go back to Deuteronomy 16 and it says roast, it doesn't say roast with fire. And that's because that's a gross mistranslation and should be boiled. Please go to the next track.